Hi, this is Tracy Swedlow, Editor-in-Chief of Interactive TV Today and Radio ITVT, and the co-producer of the TV of Tomorrow show. I am very happy to welcome Sharita Williams, President of VIDEA, and the URL for that is VIDEA.TV. Welcome to the show, Sharita.
Thank you, Tracy. Good to be with you.
Well, we're thrilled that you're here, and you're going to be participating in our TVT show coming up June 13th and 14th. And we wanted to let people know a little bit more about you and about the company, and because this definitely goes all over the world. But a little bit more about you, other than being a woman who's in charge of a software company, which is pretty rare. Although I guess your background, you have a degree from MIT in electrical engineering.
That's right. Yep.
Obviously shows the world that it's possible to be a nerd, right? And still lead a company going forward to be cool, right? I think that kind of work myself is very, commendable. So I'm impressed.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I will certainly claim techie and other things. I don't know if I can claim cool, but I appreciate it.
I think being interested in science and technology is cool, myself included, although I couldn't do math. So I couldn't become an engineer. I wanted to be maybe head of my own starship, but that's a different story. Anyway, let's talk about VIDEA. So did you found the company? From working at Cox, because I know you worked there before.
Yes, I did. So I actually co-founded it with my number two, Brad Smith. We both have been at Cox for quite some time. I myself just had my 15-year anniversary. But I was in kind of a strategy and investment role at corporate, and Brad was running one of our operations as COO. And the idea for VIDEA was really a combination of a lot of the stuff I was seeing in digital in terms of programmatic marketplaces and exchanges coming to be, and a lot of the challenges that Brad was seeing at the business where he worked, Cox Reps, in terms of all the friction that existed in the national TV spot marketplace. It's mm-hmm. just really hard to get a TV buy executed in that market. And I saw programmatic and a lot of the things that were happening in digital as kind of the way that a lot of that friction would be solved. And so we put our heads together and convinced Cox to let us start this company a few years ago. And, we're changing the way TV is bought and sold.
Well, it's interesting that Cox, was interested in enabling the local TV, broadcast TV market, to flower through this company. Did they perceive that this could lead to something that could be offered around the entire country, or did they initially just see it as something serving their local market in Atlanta?
No, it was definitely meant to be a national opportunity. We own a company called Cox Reps, as I said, and that company really is kind of the handcrafted version of a supply-side platform. They connect national advertisers to local TV station inventory, but they do it in a very manual, kind of handheld way. And we saw this business as an opportunity to bring more automation and data to that process and make it more efficient, but also to serve a much broader pool of inventory. So definitely beyond Cox's TV footprint and beyond Cox Reps's, representative footprint, all the way across really lots of different pools of video inventory, national spot, local spot, network, cable, OTT, really, every type of video impression there is. We just started with where we had a lot of knowledge of the existing market players and, existing opportunity for improvement, which is the national spot marketplace.
And now you're in the country, from your materials, 101 markets, right? 37 states, 232 nations. Is that still accurate?
That's right. Yes. Yeah. 232 stations, I think, not nations.
Stations. I'm sorry. Did I say I meant stations? And are you? What are you managing in each of those cities? Are you doing all local broadcast TV, or are you unifying all those other types of services?
Today, it's still just local TV. So it's the TV stations in those markets. In some markets, we have two stations. In some markets, we have as many as six. But we have literally all of the inventory that's available to be purchased on those TV stations 5 quarters in advance in the future. So you can buy the same thing through our platform from those TV stations that you could if you were to call the station directly or if you were to call their national rep firm directly. It's not remnant or leftover inventory. It's prime, it's sports, it's the Oscars next year, it's everything.
And of course, with the rise and interest in ATSC 3.0, the broadcast TV technology, I think that's going to transform your business going forward, correct? Or it's going to help the local TV stations sell even more inventory. Can you talk a little bit about that,
Sure.
please?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. So ATSC 3.0, or Next Gen TV, as some people call it, is really broadcasters evolving the way they send their TV signal out to the markets in a way that lets them have much more of a kind of two-way capability with the consumer. Today it's, as you know, a broadcast technology, so they send one signal and it goes to the whole DMA, the whole market. In the future with ATSC 2.0, they can send one signal to your house, a different signal to your neighbor's house, even potentially a different signal to your son or your daughter upstairs. So it becomes much more like a internet-based, almost cellular-like capability in that you can do personalized marketing. You can do multiple content streams to the home at the same time. And, it's kind of a game changer for a company like ours that is looking to help local TV stations have a much more real-time, much more personalized advertising experience. It's going to take a while to get adoption, but I think there's a ton of possibilities for consumers and broadcasters once ATSC is widely in the marketplace.
I suspect that because you have all of these, these partners that you're working with who are actively involved in making sure ATSC 3.0 happens, that you're incredibly well positioned to take advantage of that. Do you see that this might happen for you in the next year or two, or it's going to take 5 years? How long do you think it will take to really be implemented in the industry?
Yeah, I think it will take, this is just my guess. I don't really have any hard data to support this, but my sense is that it's going to take at least a couple years. I'm guessing probably closer to 3 is really the magic number. But I think it will happen a lot quicker than some prior conversions did because of the size of the companies that are backing it and the scale that they have in the marketplace. I think the experimentation will start next year. And, it'll take off very quickly once folks have a model that they coalesce around. But it is it's a pretty big change. There's different transmitters and different uses of the spectrum bandwidth that have to occur in order for this to all work. And so it won't be instantaneous. It will take at least a couple of years.
Well, it's interesting because the Justice Department just what, yesterday, I think, or is it this morning, said that the Scripps deal with Discovery could go through. So it seems like all of those companies, and Scripps is one of your partners, all of those companies are starting to, make sure they've got those alliances in order. All of that data, right? All of that, all kinds of data, right? Discovery has their hands in every single pie. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, yeah, Scripps is absolutely one of our customers and partners, and they're a very innovative broadcaster. We're very thankful to be working with them. And yep, they and many of our other partners are very invested in ensuring that, these new technologies are widely adopted and enable lots of new competitive advantages for the broadcasters. I think broadcasters have some of the best content in the market already. I mean, you can look at just the viewing for broadcast TV versus, cable and even still OTT and other options, and that's where by far the largest amount of the viewing takes place. Then you start to be able to layer on, special audio tracks and personalized streams and personalized advertising, which I think makes the viewing experience even better. And I think there's nowhere to go but up in terms of the potential for the local business.
And I'll just list a few of those other partners, stations and station groups like Hearst and Tegna and Morgan Murphy Media, Raycom. These companies will all be at our show, so it'll be great to have everybody together. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about exactly, you know, what the platform does. If people who, you know, everybody who listens to the radio or TVT podcast most likely understands programmatic buying and selling. But just in case, let's just outline what it is that the VIDIA platform does and its competitive strengths, if you would
Sure.
please.
Yeah, and we don't really use the word programmatic all that much on the supply side or the sell side, just because it means, to a lot of people, it means RTB and real-time bidding. But programmatic for, the local TV space is really about automation and data. And all it means is that we've taken the parts of the TV sales process that are high friction and hard to do and use technology to make those smoother and quicker. And we've kept the pieces of the transaction that make a lot of sense in terms of the forward reserve model and having the ability to negotiate and things like that. So what we really do is we aggregate local TV station inventory from all of our broadcast partners, and we make that inventory directly available to buyers at agencies and advertisers who can log into our screen, put in the specs and the demos for the types of audiences that they want to reach, and in real time get back an answer on what they can buy. They can then negotiate against those prices with a salesperson if they choose. They could just click buy and it would run directly into the station. So we've taken a process that today would take, days or weeks to consummate and made it possible to do it in, seconds if you don't choose to negotiate, or, hours if you do.
Is there any, what, I mean, what point in the process of doing this, instead of, except for the process of negotiation, if you want to call someone, are there still challenges and obstructions and things aren't transparent? And because I know you're very interested and passionate about helping, you know, more standards to be implemented in this environment. So where are you finding the points of you know, difficulty still, or think where things need to be smoothed out.
We've had a lot of difficulties in the process of getting this done. It started out with just kind of helping everyone understand what it is and what it isn't. That, it is about making it easier to buy and easier to sell, and not about robots and, a race to the bottom. So there was a lot of education and sort of evangelism that happened in the beginning. And then I think now the challenges have shifted more so to just ensuring that all these different legacy systems that exist in the TV stations and at the agencies, frankly, can talk to each other and talk to systems like ours that are trying to aggregate across all those systems. And that's where the kind of open standards that you mentioned really come in. We're very supportive of an effort called TIP that's out there by TVB and others to really just try and have some, what I like to say is, common handshakes across these different systems. That if you want to get information on what inventory is available to sell at a TV station, if you want to get reporting on what has actually ran against a campaign, if you want to get invoicing, all the different steps of the transaction, there's a common sort of data handshake in what that format and data looks like that, all systems like ours can use and other systems can use. And that helps us, obviously, with adoption and being able to talk to all these different systems, but it also helps the industry as a whole move forward because, innovation can happen so much quicker when everyone knows how to build to these systems and talk to them. And the advertisers and the broadcasters can start to do business in new ways that are better for both of them once, we get past this stage of just automating and getting everything, tied together and talking to each other and playing nicely. Then you can start to get to the more powerful stuff like, buying on new types of currencies and new types of audiences and, making sure that you're putting the right message in front of the right person at the right time.
By the way, if you don't already know what the TIP initiative is, it means TV Interface Practices, and you can definitely go to the TVB website and read all about it there.
Thank
You
you.
meant you mentioned currencies. I was going to ask you, what about cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, all of that? Is that
Yeah, that hasn't entered our world just yet. I mean, I certainly have played around with it as an investor, but I think we're still a ways away from having cryptocurrency as a payment for TV transactions, but could happen. Yeah, there's a lot of effort around blockchain, not so much Bitcoin. So, blockchain is really just the technology that lets a transaction happen in a very secure, distributed way. So there's not like a central gatekeeper that says this transaction is valid. It's more you know, the keys for that transaction are distributed widely across different machines, and so it's very hard to cheat it or lie to it, and so it can be very secure and anonymous or, you know, distributed all at the same time. And so I do think that part of cryptocurrency, just the blockchain technology itself, will eventually become part of how transactions are done at scale, whether it's advertising or any other transactions. But it's still, I think, super early, and we haven't seen any widespread adoption of it yet in our world.
We're going to be definitely talking about that at our show. So look forward to that. There's, you know, various people who are trying to, you know, integrate it into the advertising experience. So
I think it makes a lot of sense, because one of the challenges that exist in this targeting world is the buy side has like custom data that they want to use to target consumers. The sell side has, you know, custom data segments that they've defined for targeting consumers, and neither wants to really open their kimono and show the other one what their targeted segment is made of. So I think, you know, blockchain would be a perfect use case for, you know, I can assure you that it's the attributes that you want, and we can verify that without looking under each other's hood, so to speak. So I do think there are definite use cases for it. It's just I don't think we're there yet in terms of it being in the market.
Speaking of data, there is so much data out there that has yet to be explored or exploited. And, you know, like you said, some of these companies, or most of them, keep data, you know, completely private. But is there types of data out there that you think would be incredibly powerful to the automated purchasing experience, that would inform these buys that have yet to be tapped into? That, I mean, I know that people think maybe weather might play a part in this, or what do you?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I think there's to me, the most interesting types of data is when you start to overlay it and triangulate and use just sources that haven't been put together in the past. So I think this idea of doing sentiment analysis and really understanding the mood of an audience and, you know, matching mm-hmm. that up against the right purchasing opportunity in real time, like for a live, you know, programming event. Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. And it's not quite weather, like you're saying, but it's similar to that. You know, you could be taking sentiment from social media and using that to strike the right tone and, you know, whatever marketing message you do during that that telecast. So yeah, I just think the combinations are what are going to be most interesting, and pairing up data that people haven't used together in the past, and especially in like real-time situations like that, where you can really get a lot of bang for your buck.
I know there are various companies all working on that, and so it's exciting to see whether or not that gets picked up. And the reason I brought up weather was also because of broadcast TV and the sort of the, you know, imperative. You know, if you're in your local community, do you go out and buy something, or do you, you know, do you stay at home? The weather is going to have an effect on that. So it'll be, I'm assuming that will play a part at some point in the future.
Yeah, I think that's right. Absolutely.
And what about the use of AI technology? I know you have an interest in that as well. And being an electrical engineer, you've probably been studying this for years. So
I'm not like super steeped in AI, I would say. I've had a huge curiosity around it, but I certainly don't have a ton of research in it or anything. Most of our AI at this point is really more machine learning and using different machine learning algorithms to kind of price and value inventory. And we've been very effective at that here in the early days. You know, there's a lot of talk about using bots to do different parts of the keystroke and more manual pieces of the transaction as well. But again, you know, nothing that we're ready to unveil at CES or anything, but definitely a lot of interest and a lot of, you know, different use cases sort of percolating out there.
What would you say is something that you would like to, or you plan to build into the platform in the next 6 months to a year? Are you able to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the build for us right now, to be honest, is improvements on things that we've already built. So, you know, it's not a lot of bells and whistles that we're focused on this year, although I think there will be some, especially around trying to tie linear inventory together with other pools of inventory like OTT. I think there'll be some neat things we can do there. But the bulk of what we're doing this year is really based on, we have widespread users in the system for the first time and driving, pretty large volumes of dollars through the platform. And as a result of that, we're learning a lot of things about how we can make the transactions easier and quicker and just more streamlined. And so we're as busy taking things out as we are adding things on, because the goal really is to make it the easiest platform to buy TV. And I think once we've made it easy and simple and, powerful, we can go and then augment it so that you can buy beyond linear into these other pools, and you can do it against all kinds of different currencies and, have different valuation scenarios against that to make sure that you're maximizing your revenue or your ROI, depending on which side you're on. So like I said, it's less rocket science at this point and more just making sure we truly nail delighting the customers and making it easy to use.
Are you reaching out to broadcast studios who might own Diginets, in the and for linear TV? Is that an area of exploration?
It hasn't been a huge focus. We've talked to MCNs and other distributors in the past, and I think it will absolutely be part of what we do in the future. We're just going after the biggest pools of inventory first, right? So we're going to tackle linear. We're going to add in, OTT, because I think a huge amount of the audience is shifting there. We'll get VOD as well, digital video. I think at that point, going after the more specialized nets and stuff is the next play for us after that. But there are a lot of video impressions out there. If you look at the ones that have the most audience against them, it's kind of that order that I just went down.
So you're going to make a relationship with Roku, for example, on those platforms, or with the broadcasters or the content owners?
We would be open to it. We've had conversations with pretty much all those folks, and everyone's in a different place in terms of how they monetize their inventory. But if they're open to combining their inventory with the inventory that we bring to bear and, having a unified way to buy and sell it, we want to have those conversations.
Are you also,
I think
okay, go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say, I think Roku in particular is one of those companies that is mostly sold out in terms of being able to monetize their inventory. I think they do it very effectively. So I don't know if they'd be the first one that would come knocking or, have an opportunity to work together, but we would welcome it for sure.
I could be incorrect, but you are not necessarily selling static digital banners and things like that as well, in addition to video, correct? You're not going in that way, that direction?
No, we're all video, and today we're all linear TV. We will get beyond linear TV here very quickly, but banners would be the last thing that we do. We'd probably do audio before we do banners.
That's interesting, because you think that the some of the even linear TV station owners might want to control their the delivery of banners as well and tie that into video, all online, all at the same time. That's not an area of opportunity.
We're not hearing it as a huge need. It doesn't mean that that might not change down the road, but what we're hearing is, the huge need is around the sight, sound, and motion, video, even audio, as I said. There's just so much more ability to move the needle for an advertiser with those formats, and there's still a lot of work that needs to be done in making those formats available in a holistic way, across TV, OTT, all these different platforms. So we're focused there. I think we've got a ton to chew on that side. If we eventually get to banners, I think we do. But one thing about the display space is it's been programmatic for quite some time. And so being
Right.
able to tie that inventory into the video inventory that we're doing, it may not be that big of a lift because that stuff is all API driven already. I just know the big, huge value for both the inventory holder and the advertiser is on that video side. And we want to make sure we really nail that as our first move.
I'm assuming there aren't that you're not tracking videos that enable interactivity in any way,
No.
requesting brochures and things like that.
No, ATSC 3.0 will definitely bring that to bear for linear,
Right.
TV, over-the-air TV. Today, that's more the realm of OTT and, online, and we're not doing any of that yet.
Well, you can, the satellite companies like DirecTV and Dish, they offer interactive ads, but nobody. It just sounds like you're not going there yet, but
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, because we're working with local stations, so they just don't have the ability to do that. You could do, where you play something over the air on your TV, and then, it triggers something on your tablet or your phone, but there's not literally a back channel to the broadcast signal until ATSC 3.0 is in place.
Well, we're very bullish on ATSC 3.0, so we're going to be doing all kinds of sessions at the upcoming show in June. So
I look
you'll
forward to it.
everybody will be there. Let's see, what else? Is there something that I did not address, perhaps, that you'd like to bring up?
Sure. I mean, I'd love to tell you just a little bit about the company itself and where we're based and all that. I think we
Oh,
have
yeah.
a bit of a unique, kind of a unique story in that we're owned by a media company that has been in the business of disrupting itself for over 100 years. Cox started out in newspapers and then went into TV and radio and or newspaper, radio, TV and cable, eventually auto auctions and auto trader and lots of digital businesses. So, I'm owned by a company that we looked at a business that we were in and we saw this disruptive technology coming along in terms of programmatic. And we basically leaned in and said, how do we turn this into an opportunity instead of a threat? And I feel very lucky to work for the kind of company that thinks that way and gives people like me the chance to go out and create a growth story in a new market. But I think it is unique. I think the way we've approached the market and built our product and our services in a way that is trying to really, help make the business better, not turn it on its head. I think all of that speaks to kind of our heritage and where we come from and just how we see the world. So just wanted to get that in because I think we are a little bit different than kind of the, typical tech startup that you might talk to.
And what about Cox's cable business?
Yeah, Cox is one of the leading MVPDs. I think we might be the fifth largest at this point. Definitely not at, near as big as Comcast or some of those guys, but they're super innovative in terms of the cable space. I think our sister company, Cox Cable, was the very first television companies to partner with Google for programmatic advertising on TV, and that was, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. It was well before we started with this. They were literally the first cable company to say yes to working with Google and trying to figure it out. Thankfully, it didn't work out, or we might not have ever started video if it did. And I think, Google just had a different approach to it back then in terms of seeing it as a place to kind of sell remnant inventory. And TV is just not as much about that. It's got to be about yield and lots of other things. But it's, just shows you that Cox Cable has been pushing the envelope for a long time. We learned a lot from those experiments that they did in early days. And they just the culture of Cox as a whole across all of our businesses is very, listen to the customer, focus on the customer, and I think that has served us well in terms of how we've approached this space as well. But yeah, Cox Cable is a big, huge part of the company and one that, we've learned a lot from.
And speaking about Google and companies like that, do you see Facebook and Google and or even Twitter down the road if they get their act in gear? Do you see them as potential competitors for offering this type of platform, or do you think they
I
won't be
think
able to?
so. I mean,
Yeah.
they're such a huge part of the digital wallet and, the ad wallet in general that I don't think anyone can, say with a straight face that you're not competing with them in some way. I do think they're coming at it from different directions. Facebook, I think, it's got a lot of changes going on right now, so I'm not sure where they end up on this. But I think for Google, they're coming at it primarily through the over-the-top space and kind of banking on the world shifting to that model as opposed to the current TV distribution models. And then, I think that's not a bad way to go at it. The world is certainly changing in terms of how it's distributed, but I think a lot of the content providers are ending up being fairly similar in the OTT space as they are in the linear space. So we think if we are in business with the folks who are the leaders in the linear space, we're well positioned to partner with them in the over-the-top space as well. But yes, I think, Google and Facebook and others have a ton of interest in figuring out how to marry the best parts of digital marketing and digital advertising with TV and video and big screen advertising.
I definitely get the feeling that we're at another major transition point. right before everything starts happening, like you said, maybe 2 years when ATSC 3.0 changes everything and those other players get into the game, it feels like another inflection point, transition point. Mm-hmm. Would you agree? Or
I do. I mean, it's hard when you've been in the industry because it feels like we're always, there's like the one constant is change, right? I mean, it just never stops. Like there's always, there was the iPad and, it always keeps coming and you always think this is the thing that's going to dramatically change everything. Or they say, this generation doesn't watch TV the way other generations did. And then they have kids and they do. And it's like, it's hard to tell. I honestly think that, we make it about the technology and we talk about programmatic and automation and all this stuff. And I really just think ultimately all that's happening is the consumers have more choice and more power, and the technology and the providers are just trying to keep up with the consumer and reaggregate all of that fragmentation into scale that, they can make a living on. So I don't think that the TV ecosystem is going to completely change dramatically. I just think, this kind of shift to the consumers being able to have tons of choice and put together how they spend their, entertainment dollars and their entertainment time is it's just the rest of the world trying to keep up with that and react to that.
Well, I speaking of choice, I'm one thing that I think potentially could happen in the future is, all of these algorithms keep changing and disintermediating broadcasters who are delivering to Facebook and to YouTube and all the online channels where all these young people, get their video, or me, I get it too. But, and then when ATSC 3.0 arises and, everybody starts shifting around where they deposit their video, that is going to be a wild, wild west, I think. And you will be positioned potentially to take advantage of the, in some ways, like video migration of people looking for a way to monetize their video on all sorts of new services that I think will emerge because these other online video companies are, changing their priorities. And I'm just putting that out there. I wasn't, it's just an opinion. Just sort of
I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, who knows what Amazon's going to do or what,
right.
Netflix is going to do. What if they start having ads? I mean, yeah, everything's in play. I mean, I the content business, especially on the video side, is a very, very expensive business. I mean, you can look at the P&Ls of a lot of these companies and see how expensive it is. And so, we're going to always be in the business trying to help people figure out how to get more value out of that content because it is expensive to produce. It is not free.
Well, thank you so much, Sharita. I really appreciate it. That's a great place to stop. I'm looking forward to meeting you in person, and I hope everybody checks out your site at videa.tv and your session at our conference coming up.
Thank you so much, Tracy. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. See you soon.
Take care.
All right,
that is Sharita Williams, and she's president of VIDIA, as I said. And I'm Tracy Swedlow, editor-in-chief of Radio ITVT and Interactive TV Today at itvt.com. You can access more podcasts by going to itvt.com/podcast. And check out upcoming TV of Tomorrow at tvotpshow.com. It's happening in San Francisco, June 13th and 14th. Speak to you next time.